Bonjour, and welcome back to another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater. I like that little French twist you threw in there.
Yes, je suis français. I don't know what came over me, but I just felt like, you know, let's mix it up a bit. We are so delighted to be living in mid-April of this year rather than any time before during this year because the sun is shining and bookshops are back open. So we're going to be talking about our love of bookshops today. But first, what are you reading at the moment, Alice?
Okay, so we were just saying before we started the pod, I've had a bad reading month so far. I just had a look through. I've read about 5 or 6 books. One was a reread of Erin Kelly's The Burning Air, which I loved. One was a cookbook called Midnight Chicken, so it doesn't really count. But all the fiction I've read has just not been that great. But the last book I read was one called Literally Show Me a Healthy Person by Darcy Wilder. I do not know why I picked this book up. It turns out it was like a buzzy celebrity book of like yesteryear.
Who is this person?
So she's big on Twitter. Like, oh. I think she's like an OG, like viral Twitter account. But like Kendall Jenner was seen reading this book in 2017. So it enjoyed a brief stint of being very popular. I don't know why I felt drawn to it, but I do not recommend it. It's a kind of abstract stories told through tweets.
Yeah. I mean, obviously that could work, but it would have to be actually good. Do you know what I mean?
It's so abstract. And there are so many lines in this book are just tweets that you would see on any like big account that's known for like millennial
relatable like, content.
Malaise. Yeah, it's just, I didn't like it. And then prior to that, I read one called People Like Her. I can't even remember who it's by. It's by a couple, and they're called, like, Ellery. They've used their names smushed together. And I didn't like that either.
Yeah, I recognise this. I think my dad has read it. Is it about mommy bloggers?
Yeah, it's about the world of mom influencers. Mm. Like, top-tier million followers.
That mother of daughters kind of vibe.
Yes, exactly. But, like, my problem with it, it gets very silly, but that's fine. I don't mind thrillers that get a bit silly, but my big problem with it is that the authors just made up a lot of stuff. Mm. Like the way that the main character gets her platform is just not how anything works. She gets an agent, she has 200 followers, the agent buys her 10,000 followers, and that's the beginning of that account. And it's like,
none of that makes sense.
Teenage fantasy, like, what the fuck is this? And my other big beef with it is they hire a nanny and they are particularly attracted to this woman because she's in her mid-60s and doesn't really, she's not very online, but she's in her mid-60s and she doesn't know what Instagram is.
Nah,
she's
ridiculous.
Surprised. Yeah, like she's surprised to hear that people have the internet on their phones.
No.
My mom's 67, yeah. And she's on Instagram like a fucking menace.
Gina,
like,
is extremely online.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just found so much of it just a bit silly, and it could have been edited to just make a little bit more sense and feel more relevant.
And it's weird that it is weird to think that, like, not only did somebody write that, but like multiple people. You know, I just think once you're kind of in the publishing machine and you get edited, it does make you kind of look at other stuff like that and be like, how did no one pick up on that? Like, when I'm being fucking edited to shit, you know, like on my books for like every minor kind of inconsistency, it does just make me go like, who let this happen?
I can only imagine that perhaps the writers are very headstrong and were just like, no, is fine. We know exactly what we're doing. And then also, so as a side note, as I said, it got a little bit silly, but I also found the actual ending, the thing that happens, the dastardly thing that the whole book is leading towards, just felt so unlikely. Mm. And I don't mean unlikely as in like you had to suspend your disbelief. It just didn't feel functionally correct for that character to do that thing. If you've read this book and want to discuss it, please feel free to slide into my DMs. I'll tell you exactly what I mean. But it would be a massive spoiler, so I'm not going to say on the pod.
Well, my dad can't slide into your DMs because he is extremely offline, but he does listen to this pod, so he will have loads of opinions that he will email me and I will have to forward to you.
I can't wait. Cool.
So look forward to that. Have you read anything else that you would like to tell me how rubbish it is?
I also read something called Greenwich Park, which is also a mom-themed thriller, and I don't know why these books are finding me because it's not one of my personal interests.
Mom thrillers. That's not your niche.
I think, hold on. I think I discussed Greenwich Park in the last episode.
You did bring it up last week.
So I'll strike it from the record. What about you? What are you reading at the moment?
So I am reading Clara and the Sun by Katsuo Ishiguro, which I bought in a real bookshop this week. And I am loving it so far. But of course I would, because he is my favourite author. But we will, you know, we'll come to this later.
Yeah, we'll get to that. So that's my
reading life this week.
Okay, gorge. Well, as they say on the vlogs, should we dive right in?
Without okay. further ado.
The phrase, without further ado, let's dive right in. I see like a white heat behind my eyes. I hate it so much.
Like, is there not one other phrase that they can alternate it with?
I think it's mainly also because it always comes after like a 20-minute preamble and like a 10-minute sponsorship slot.
If you had any interest in diving right in, you would have done it, bitch.
Yeah, if we're going to dive right in, let's dive from the get-go, all right? You don't stand on the fucking diving board for 25 minutes talking about Squarespace.
But we do spend, how long has this been? 6 minutes talking about books you didn't like.
This is our format, all right.
This is our content.
Anyway, without further ado, let's dive right in.
Let's dive right into bookshops, because they are open now in England, the place where we both live. And we are happy about it.
Have you made it into a bookshop yet?
You know I have, because you reposted it on the What Page Are You on Instagram. Yes, I have been to a bookshop. I went to Kirkdale Books in Sydenham, and I bought the book I just mentioned, Clara and the Sun. And it was very nice.
Does that mean you got the beautiful indie bookshop edition?
I believe so. I have not investigated what the different editions look like, but...
Turquoise, blue, rather than red.
No, I have the red one.
Oh, interesting.
Well,
they must have sold right through.
Yeah, they. When I went in to get mine, because I mentioned it on Twitter that morning, they'd like put one aside for me in case they sold out. And when I went in to buy it, there was my copy behind the till, and there were two more copies behind the till, and there was like one or two on the table. So I feel like obviously it was doing good.
It's that book is popping off. I feel.
It looks nice. And he's a good writer. What more could you want?
He is a good writer, but The Buried Giant did not pop off.
And I haven't even read that. And like, given he is my fave author, the fact that I just have elected to not read a whole book is something. You know.
Says a lot. Anyway.
Have you been to a bookshop?
Yes, I have. I toddled straight off to my local bookshop, which is a really tiny independent store called Phlox in Leytonstone. And they'd had a flood, like, the day before.
What?
Or, like, the Saturday before. They'd had this massive flood. There was all these Instagram stories of just the complete, totally empty bookshelves, complete chaos. So the owners were there until, like, 1 a.m. the day before getting the shop ready for Monday. So I felt like I owed them a purchase.
Yeah, geez.
Yeah, so I went down and my husband bought the new George Saunders, which... I'm very excited to read, but I just felt like I'm not going to read that anytime soon, so I wasn't going to buy the hardback.
Mm.
But yeah, he was keen, so he picked up that. And I purchased Open Water.
Yes, by Caleb Azuma Nelson.
Yes, that's it.
Yes, that looks so good.
Yeah, it looks so good. It's about like a couple in London. I think that's the best way I can sum it up, considering I haven't read it yet. And then I also got a paperback, the name of which I completely forget. So you'll have to just check our Instagram stories.
It'll be which there.
Will have disappeared by Friday. Eh. Well, whatever. I made two purchases, and the other book I'm reading right now and I am loving. So I will update you guys on it when the time is right.
In the fullness of time.
So my first question about bookshops was just like, what is for you, if you had to do like, you know, the George Orwell essay Moon Underwater, on the water?
No.
He describes his ideal pub, okay? We're going to do this exercise, but with bookshops.
Uh-huh.
So, like, what is your, like, archetypal, the perfect Burt bookshop?
Well, I just feel like, for me, the most important factor is, like, kind of non-intimidating, and I am able to just kind of poke around without feeling like I'm being spied on, and that I can be in there for as long as I want. Because I do find it hard sometimes to find a book that I want to read.
I just like the idea of you feeling spied on.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to be, you know, I just want to be left to touch the books and pick up the books and look at the back of the books and not feel like I'm wasting their time by being in there.
Aww. I think that's like a very noble description of your ideal bookshop. Like, it's simple. It's clean.
I will be left alone.
I mean, I like having conversations with booksellers, but there is a big difference for me between a genuine conversation with a bookseller who has something to say about what I'm browsing and the old hard sell.
You know, yeah.
Like the lush treatment.
Yeah.
So what about like location? You know, like, do you seek out, do you prefer like massive stores or little shops down winding alleyways?
For my personal needs, I think I prefer a really big shop. I actually, you know, I do like a chunky lad, like Foyles on Charing Cross Road or one of the bigger central London Waterstones.
Yeah, see, I agree. I feel like what I want is either a massive shop that has so much stock I couldn't touch every book in a day.
Yeah.
Or a small shop that's incredibly niche.
Yeah.
So like Gay is the Word. I mean, we'll come to our favorite bookshops later, but you know, like Gay is the Word specializes in queer fiction. I'm going to find titles there that I wouldn't necessarily find in the queer section of a massive Waterstones, or like Pages on Cheshire, may she rest in peace. That was an independent bookshop connected to Pages of Hackney, which has like a more feminist slant. It did not survive the pandemic, sadly, but that one would also have like a collection of titles that I might not necessarily find as easily in a big store.
Mm.
Whereas a really small independent bookshop, I love those, cherish them, brilliant. But like, if they're just focusing on bestsellers, I'm probably not going to find anything that I haven't already heard of.
So true.
Do you know what I mean? And that's what I like about browsing bookshops. I want to see books that appeal to me that I haven't heard of already.
Yep, you're right. She's right.
So if you owned your own bookshop, what would your vibe be?
Books that I like. Just kidding.
That's legit, though. If that would be the vibe, that's the vibe.
Well, yeah, I think although I personally like being in a massive bookshop where anything could happen, if I had a bookshop, I'd want, you know, a little pokey thing, a little dusty place. Aww. You know, with loads of crap everywhere.
That's very cute.
That's what, like, I would want that, for myself.
Like, you know, that little model kit that everyone had online?
No.
Have you seen that? It's like paper crafting. Our friend Jenny Tighe, hey pal, did the gardening one.
Oh, yes.
And they're little paper crafty kits. You have to cut tiny little things out and stick little things together and paint little things. There was a bookshop, one of those, and I'm now picturing that as your bookshop.
Yes, I bet it would. I feel like that is the exact vibe I'm going for. Would be the kind of thing that someone would want to make in tiny.
Love that.
How about you?
To work in a bookshop, obviously I've been a bookseller. I've worked in all sorts of different bookshops. Within the Waterstones, under the Waterstones umbrella.
The Waterstones Cinematic Universe.
Yeah. Why? If you add Cinematic Universe to the end of literally anything, I'm going to laugh. I'm on board with it.
What was it I did the other day? Oh, yeah, the Below Deck. It was Below Deck Cinematic Universe. I just find it so silly. You know, I just find...
It just trickles me.
I have no respect for Marvel as a brand, and I find the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe really silly, so I'm trying to reclaim it.
I think the phrase cinematic universe is also inherently funny, and it's helpful for me because I cannot remember what MCU stands for ever. I probably ask my husband like once a year. Remind me what it is.
Or it may be comics, I don't know, but I'm reclaiming it.
No, so it's cinematic.
You have worked in the...
It differentiates from the comics. Anyway,
yeah,
whatever.
So true.
Okay,
you worked in the Waterstones Cinematic Universe.
Cinematic Universe. But so for a shop to work in, my best experience was Gower Street for a whole host of reasons. But I loved working in a massive bookshop. That was the dream. It meant that I got to mostly focus on the sections that I'm interested in. I loved it. But if I was running a shop, so the thing with working in a massive bookshop is that it's also much more stressful.
Mm.
So fucking stressful. For a whole other host of reasons. So I think if I was to own a shop, I would also want small, but like not pokey small. I guess like my ideal size would be like, thinking like...
Ground floor of the LRB.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, I was thinking like Daunts in Holland Park.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's bigger. Yeah.
I want enough space because at the end of the day, if you have an independent bookshop, you do have to have stuff that people expect to see when they walk into a bookshop because that's how you're going to make your money.
Yeah.
So, you know... I want enough space to be like commercially sensible, but also to follow my personal whims. And I'd like it to be ghost themed.
Yes, I want this for you. This makes sense.
Alice's Haunted Bookshop.
Yes.
And I really like small bookshops that have a bar, which is why I would need that floor space, because I want a little bar. Come in.
You to have a little bar.
Get a little cocktail, get a little glass of wine, have a little beer on a hot summer's day. Purchase some kind of horrible fiction. Maybe some kind of ghost-shaped candle. I don't know.
I want to go to the combination haunted house bar bookshop.
And then also, I really like the idea. It'd be very important to me to find a location that had some kind of intimidating trap door. You know, like like Burley Fisher have a downstairs that looks like a basement you'd see in the movie Saw. Yeah, I want like a Saw basement.
With nothing in it, just there.
With just stock, old stock. It's where if I miss a return and it doesn't go in the sale, it's where that stock would go to die. And it'd be like, you know, it'd become like a cool thing with customers. Do you dare go into the basement?
The book's graveyard.
Yeah, exactly. If you can spend a whole night in there, you can take anything from there for free. Just one thing though, I'm a business Oh, it's nice to dream.
It is so good to have a dream. So your next question that you would like to ask me, and I would like to ask you, is do you like digging around secondhand bookshops or do you prefer newer?
Okay, so this might be controversial, but I actually prefer new stores rather than secondhand. I love buying secondhand books and I like going to charity shops and looking at
what they got.
Book sections, yeah. Just kind of like to have a little nose. But on the whole, I do tend to read more frontlist than backlist, so I'm more likely to spend money in a bookshop that stocks brand new books.
This is interesting to me because I think because we get sent new books, not, you know, every day, but like semi-regularly, and obviously not all of them are things we actually want to read, but enough of them are, I actually prefer buying secondhand books. I prefer going to secondhand bookshops because I am more likely to see something in there that I'm like, oh yes, I have lived on this planet for 31 years and I've been meaning to read that, or that looks interesting. I'm more likely to buy something from a secondhand bookshop because I'm more likely to have at one point in my life thought about it and then not bought it. Whereas with new stuff, I feel like I'm aware of most things that are out there that I would be interested in. So I'm more likely to find something that intrigues me in a secondhand bookshop.
See, I suppose now that you've phrased it like that, If I'm bookshopping with a compadre, a secondhand bookstore with someone who knows their shit is a great experience.
I feel like if you were in a secondhand bookshop with me, you would have a good time. But if I was in a new bookshop with you, I would have a good time.
Ah, yeah, that's true. Interesting. But then I suppose, you know what? I just find in general, and maybe this is a silly thing to say, maybe people can correct me, but there aren't that many secondhand bookshops in London that specialise in fiction. So, like, there's obviously in central London on that, what's the right, is it the Strand that leads to Piccadilly?
For me, the secondhand bookshops are on Charing Cross Road.
Yeah, no, that's it. I'm thinking Charing Cross Road. So around there, or like Cecil Court, they're specialising in, they're not cheap secondhand, like, they're not secondhand bookshops that are selling paperbacks for £1. They're selling first editions and, or specialist stores, like selling art books or what have you. And that's, for me, is not, like, the spirit of secondhand bookshopping. Like,
yeah.
I'm not a collector. I'm not looking for special editions. I want to find a mass market paperback from the 1990s, and I want to pay 99p for it.
Yeah, I feel like, for me, when I think of, like, secondhand bookshops, I'm thinking of, like, you know, the Oxfam bookshops or the, you know, a charity shop with a good book section.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we've covered London, but what about abroad?
I love Shakespeare & Co. in Paris.
Yes, I have been there.
Do you, when you travel, do you specifically seek out English language bookshops, or do you just like pop in if you come across them?
I pop in if I come across them, but if there is a bookshop that's like of architectural interest or like I've heard is cool, I will go there. So I really like Porto, the city in Portugal, and they have a really amazing bookshop called Livraria Lello, and it's just really like beautiful and cool, and so I specifically have been there on my travels. But in general, no, I tend not to. And the one place that I will go to bookshops abroad is New York, which obviously is an English-speaking city, so yeah, the vibe is slightly different, but they have good bookshops. I like to go to McNally Jackson. I like to go to Blue Stockings. I even like to go to the Strand.
I loved Blue Stockings, which is a radical bookshop. Lots of like queer writing, feminist writing on like race. It's just, and writing on class, like, it's a really cool experience. I really
and it's
that.
It's, I think literally this week they have changed the management structure so that it's being run as a co-op by the workers.
Ooh,
which is very
cool.
So yeah, definitely visit there if you're ever in New York, when we can travel again.
So the last time I was in New York, so the one thing, obviously, that in America, obviously the covers of books are often different. So something might catch my eye and then I'll look at it properly and be like, oh, that's just so-and-so, that's just that. So I ended up, we went to a lot of bookshops, obviously. I probably went to like 3 or 4, from Barnes & Noble to The Strand to Blue Stockings. And so I got into this habit of like checking, like Googling every book that caught my eye. I was just like cross-referencing it with the Waterstones website to see if these books had been published in the UK, because books are really expensive in America. They're like $20 for a paperback, a new paperback, 30 plus for a hardback. So they're really expensive and they're heavy to carry. And I didn't want to keep buying stuff that was just available to me in the UK, which was good. It meant that like I was able to pick stuff up that I was like excited to find and like, you know, wouldn't be able to get easily. But it did also mean that I ended up not buying lots of stuff that I probably would have read quicker if I had just bought them from the shop that had thought to position them commercially so that someone like me would find them. So I'm not going to make that mistake next time. Like, maybe I'd rather just spend more money on books that I could just get in the UK, but I've bought them because, you know, Blue Stocking has taken the time to order them, display them, stock them. Whereas going somewhere like New Orleans, which is my favorite city in the world, the bookshops there will always have way more books that are actually set in New Orleans than are available from most other places. So book shopping in New Orleans is a true pleasure, but also like my spidey sense is off when I'm shopping in American bookstores, like, because I know what I can read a UK cover.
Yeah, so true.
I know what the genre is. I know
you can interpret
what the audience is. Yeah, exactly. I'm a book whisperer, but it turns out only in one language.
Yes.
only in one country. So I can be a bit thrown. I can end up buying something thinking that it's one thing and it's actually more of another. But that's, you know, I guess that's part of the pleasure of it.
It's the joy of travel, experiencing new things. So,
and then what about in London or in the UK?
Well, call me a basic bitch, but my favourite bookshop in terms of like, and this is, you know, largely kind of sentimental, I think. I love Waterstones Gower Street.
Oh, that's my favourite one too.
Well, I love it because I went to UCL. UCL is across the road from Waterstones Gower Street, like literally the entrance to like the lecture theatre that I did a lot of my like first year lectures in is literally across the road from Waterstones Gower Street. And yeah, for me, it just kind of represents like independence, freedom, like being kind of happy. I really loved going to UCL. Like, I had the best time. Yeah, just, I don't know. I feel like Waterstones Gower Street encapsulates a real emotional thing for me, and I've spent kind of more time there as an adult, as you know, post university as well, and always have a nice time. And yeah, I don't know, it really has like good vibes and good memories for me.
I love that shop. It's very, so it also has good memories for me. It started life as, well, I mean, it started life as lots of little units, but in the 1930s ish I want to say, it became a Dillon's, and so it's been a bookshop for a really fucking long time. It's so beautiful. The building is really labyrinthine. It's got lots of little nooks and crannies. It's just stunning. It's a beautiful shop. I loved working there. I absolutely love visiting there now. I used to go to the Dillon's as a kid as well with my dad, so it feels very precious in that regard. Like, those floors know my little childhood
pitter-patter.
I love it. And also, I feel like Gower Street for me, I'd started working at Waterstones in Walthamstow for like 2 years, and then I moved to Essex, the branches in Essex. I've worked in every single branch in Essex at one point or another. But book selling, I then moved it to London, like to Gower Street. And bookselling in Gower Street in a big shop like that was just such a different experience to working in smaller shops. And it was the first time, I think, as a bookseller that I was really coming into contact with, like, independent publishers, which obviously now I assume most branches of Waterstones will have a better selection of indie presses. But at the time, we just didn't really get them in. This was, like, 2015. And yeah, like, it, so for me, it, like, really represents, like, a new phase in, like, my reading life and my bookselling life. So I just love it for that reason as well.
And another good thing about Waterstones Gower Street is that it's a short walk from the LRB bookshop, which is also a delight. Yes. It has the best Twitter account in the world. It makes me laugh every day, that Twitter account.
It's so good.
And yeah, they just have a really good selection, really, like, nice, knowledgeable staff. Shout out Gail and Claire in particular, who we love.
Oh, so much.
And yeah, I love it. I love being in there. It feels very, like, clean and bright and a pleasant space to be in. They have a really good children's and YA section downstairs. They have lots of poetry and theatre books. It's just, you know, it's just nice.
It's a really well curated store, and I feel like that's, if I'm not in a massive shop, if I'm in, like, a, I would call it the LRB, like, a mid-size rather than a small store. If you're in a mid-size store though, you still need, like, on point curation, and the LRB really smashes that. I'm always going to find something that I want in there.
Yep. Totally. And I just feel like in there, maybe it's because, like, I kind of vaguely know a couple of people that work in there. I just feel like I could ask for recommendations and feel reassured by their advice.
And also the LRB, it was Gail at the LRB that brought Tiny Moons into my life. So I feel indebted forever for that recommendation.
God, they're good.
So the next one on my list is really, it's more like for the novelty factor, but whenever I visit, I always make a point of buying something because I just want it to exist forever. It's Words on the Water, which is a secondhand bookshop on a canal boat by King's Cross Station. Have you ever visited?
I've seen it, but I think when I've been past, it hasn't been open. So I've never actually tried to buy anything from there. Oh, tell me more.
It's just so lovely. There's a dog. It's got, like, little squashy chairs. It's got books everywhere, but it's still very beautifully organized. And just, yeah, I absolutely love it. They do have some new books as well. So I think the last time I went there was a few years ago now with my friend Liv. Hey, Liv. And I bought a book about bookshops, which felt very fitting. So I just wanted to buy something to, like, support them. And that was new. It's, like, beautifully illustrated bookshops around the world. But yeah, I think if you're ever in, and it's also walking distance from LRB, a little bit further afield, but if you're doing a bookshop crawl in London, it's definitely one that you should hit.
I will definitely try and prioritise going there when I'm next in that part of the world. So then another one that's actually in the same kind of LRB, Waterstones, Gower Street, King's Cross quadrant of London is Gaze the Word, which is also in Bloomsbury, very near to Waterstones Gower Street. And it's just, yeah, it's an LGBT bookshop that is very lovingly run and curated by the LGBT people that work there. They were extremely supportive of Melt My Heart, which is my second novel, and I did, like, a, you know, sign some of their copies. And then a lot of kind of LGBT themed events are run in connection with them. They're just very, like, involved and on it, and I really like them.
And, like, they've been around for a long time.
Yeah.
They have, like, incredible archives of, like, queer activism from yesteryear in their, I want to say attic, maybe basement. But, like, you know, there's just so much more than a functioning business. It's a real, like, community hub, and I think they're great.
I think they're so great.
So then we can just skip through a few others. Like, we've already mentioned Pages for Hackney, which I really like. Pages for Cheshire Street, though. Do you remember we went there for an event? I forget what the fuck it was.
Wasn't it
an Influx event?
Yeah.
I had a good time. I really liked it. And I'm sad that it's gone. But it lives on in Pages of Hackney. Pages of or Pages for?
Anyway, Pages whatever. Of.
Pages of. And then, yeah, there's a few other. I mean, London, we're really spoiled for indies. And I feel like even pre-pandemic indie bookshops, it just felt like there was, like, these shops kind of stepping up their game a little bit. Mm. Like, doing more events, having more of an internet presence. Obviously, the pandemic has been fucking devastating for small businesses, but indies have really rallied online. And yeah, there's fucking loads, and I feel really lucky to have so much choice. Oh yeah, and then I was just going to talk about our... So we've talked about our favourites, but realistically, what are your most frequented bookshops pre-pandemic and during the pandemic?
Pre-pandemic, probably places like Waterstones Piccadilly or Waterstones Gower Street, just because they're places that I could feasibly be near in my business, in, you know, whatever I was doing in central London. You know, Foyle was on Charing Cross Road. Yeah, just basically any central London one. But now I love buying books from Kirkdale Bookshop, which is really near me. And I'm obviously, the pandemic has been very bad and very shit. But a thing that has come out of it that has been nice has been really engaging with my local area, which I'd only really lived in for like 6 months before the pandemic hit. And obviously it's like not that far from where I grew up, but I hadn't actually lived here as an adult for a while. And yeah, I love knowing what's going on with my local bookshop and I love buying books from there. So I was very happy to bounce right in there on Monday as soon as it opened.
Oh, yeah. How about you? I worked in, my office was in West London, or still is in West London. I just haven't been there in over a year. So Daunce in Holland Park was my most frequented bookshop pre-pandemic. And also, according to Monzo, it was my most shopped in non-food related shop.
Wow.
So Daunce in Holland Park was my number one, just because it was, I walked past it every single day. So it's always there tempting me. Otherwise for me, every other bookshop would be like a destination bookshop. So I'd be heading to Gower Street specifically because I want to go to a bookshop, or Foyle's in Stratford Westfield.
I like that one.
Near where I live. I'm going to be honest, it's not my fav.
Well, I like it because they were like, they would very prominently display No Big Deal when it came out. So that's my main motivation for liking Foyle's in Stratford Westfield.
No, I think like it's a very good bookshop. I just find that they tend to stock less interesting titles compared to the much bigger branch in on Charing Cross Road.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Which is obviously understandable, but, you know, if I'm going to nitpick, I wouldn't necessarily go out of my way to visit Foyle's. I'd sooner go to Walthamstow Waterstones, which is, you know, my alma mater, so I'm going to see my pals.
Feel like you're right at home.
Exactly. I just love bookshops, mate. I love them.
So, now that the bookshops are open, we thought we would give you a few little recommendations of things that you can pick up when you slide into your local bookshop or you go to a destination bookshop.
So I've kind of compiled this list. I wanted to focus on stuff that I hadn't read or purchased yet. So it was more like not just recommendations, but like a bit of a like what I will be buying. But actually, that's really hard to do.
Yeah.
So many of the books I wanted to put down actually are not out yet. So it defeats the purpose of the list. So we have a bit of a mixed bag of stuff that we've recommended to you before, but we want to remind you of, and stuff that you may not have heard of yet. As we say, I'll dive right in. First one on my list is Tall Bones by Anna Bailey. Have you heard of this one?
I have. I really love the cover. It's the one that's got like the white church spire on the cover, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really love that cover.
Is it an inverted church spire as well? Yes. So this is a thriller. Comes recommended by all the real like crime glitterati. So like SJ Watson, Paula Hawkins, Jane Harper, Renee Knight. It's about a 17-year-old girl who leaves her best friend at a party in the woods. And then she never sees her again. The girl goes missing. It sounds fucking great and I really fancy it.
Yes, it does sound great. So I would like to read, and I would have not read yet, but would like to read Memorial by Brian Washington. I feel like it's been out for a while in hardback and it looks really banging. And that is what I would buy in a bookshop. So the little blurb that I have copied and pasted from the internet is, family tragedy forces a young queer couple to reassess their relationship in this tender, compassionate and wryly funny novel. Have you read this?
I haven't, but this is the one where a couple who are having some difficulties and one dude has to go away for a little bit. And for some reason, his mom moves into his flat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the vibe. So it's like a kind of unexpected meeting of this like guy and his partner's mother.
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds fun.
That's what
remind me what did Brian Washington write?
He had a collection of short stories called Lot.
Yes, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, decent literary pedigree before this.
Yeah, it's like, I guess it definitely has like a slightly more commercial vibe to it than Lot did, which only intrigues me further.
Well, I will read it and report back.
I can't wait. So the next on my list is The Dangers of Smoking in Bed by Mariana Enriquez. So this is the second collection from this author. She also wrote Things We Lost in the Fire. So just to give you like a vague idea, Patti Smith posted it on her Instagram account and she described it as short stories by the gifted Argentine writer and journalist. Her work, Tainted Rivers, Corrupted Streets, Spoiled Meat, Slain Children, sorry, my eyesight's so bad, deeply registers the horror of known commonplace. She writes her stories based in the atmosphere of truth with a darkly descriptive poetic turn. Mm. I think that sounds so like a bit of me. I actually haven't read the first collection, but I have made my purchase and I'm intrigued and excited to find out what this author's all about.
Yeah,
I feel like she's one that short story readers always bring her collections up, so I'm jazzed.
I'm going to make a note of that so that I can buy it because it sounds very good. So I have like two other recs, which are both things I have read, which I know is like not necessarily the vibe, but they're just two that I've thought about a lot since I read recently. And the first is Little Scratch by Rebecca Watson. And I know you agree that it's banging. And it's just a stream of consciousness novel told over the course of a day in the life of a young woman working in an office in London. And it is banging.
And we did cover it at the beginning of the year.
We talked about it in conjunction to the Women's Prize episode in that I read it fully expecting it to be on the shortlist and it wasn't. So
but I have an update. I know why it wasn't on the shortlist.
Why?
Because there is a word count minimum.
Thrilling. What an interesting thing. And so it didn't meet the minimum word count.
Yeah, the minimum word count I believe is 40K. And Little Scratch is more like 30K because it is sort of part in verse stream of consciousness. Like, it's got words all over the place, but the actual word count is too small.
Who told you this? How did you find this out?
I can't remember. Someone sent me a message.
And well, that's very interesting.
I meant to do like an update straight away in the next episode, but I forgot to make a note of it. So it completely left my smooth brain.
A news flash.
But thank you so much to the person who messaged me. I'm sorry that I've completely forgotten your identity, but
we appreciate you.
Yeah, I carry my gratitude in my heart. The next one on my list was This One Sky Day by Leonie Ross, which I also have to issue a correction and apology for, which I believe we may have already done, but just to cover our bases, I completely misunderstood what this book was and basically described it as like a magical realist one day by David Nichols. Nothing like that. It's not like that at all. But I have read it now. If you like literary magical realism, like along the lines of Toni Morrison, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Arundhati Roy, this one is going to be for you. It's completely bizarre and brilliant and beautiful. It's set in a fictional Caribbean. I can never say this word.
Archipelago.
I can never say the word archipelago first go. I feel like I need a run up to it. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, it's set in a fictional Caribbean archipelago. Called Poppy Show, and it's just amazing. It's very long and sprawling, and there's a lot of characters. There's this incredible cast of characters to keep track of. So if you're the kind of person who reads for plot and you want like short, sharp page turners, this is not going to be one for you. If you like the kind of really rich literary fiction that keeps you kind of meandering, then this one's for you. I think it's absolutely incredible, and I mean, the hardback edition is so beautiful.
It looks so good. The
edition has like sprayed edges like butterfly wings, and apparently every single one is different. I just think it's so, so, so great. So yeah, if that's your kind of thing, please go and read it. It's just, and it will really, I don't even want to tell you, there is an aspect of it which is so surprising and kind of wild, which Bethany, you can probably see if you've got our notebook open.
Yes, I can see it. Yeah. And that sounds wild.
Yeah, it's wild, but I don't want to spoil the surprise, so don't read any reviews, just experience This One Sky Day for yourself.
So if you like very kind of mind-boggling, intricate literary books by women, my next recommendation is Piranesi by Susanna Clarke, which I have mentioned in the Women's Prize episode again, but I just keep thinking about it. I think about it all the time. I love
it.
I really love it. It's just, yeah, it's really kind of stayed in my brain.
Do I hear top 10 potential?
I think I would be shocked if there was much better than that that I read this year. So,
excellent.
Yes.
Okay.
I just love it. It just does, it really, given that in the beginning I was like, oh, this is so hard to read. I'm finding it tedious. And then by the end I was like, oh my God, I'm having the time of my life.
That's the thing, is it? I really believe in terms of reading, like, read what you want, of course. But sometimes, like, flexing that the muscle of concentration to force yourself, or, like, you know, be hard on yourself, make yourself be challenged, it can be so fucking rewarding.
Yeah, I'm so happy that I read Piranesi. I'm loving life.
Yeah, you have to be in the right zone. Next on our list is one called Manning Tree Witches by A.K. Blakemore. I actually don't know a huge amount about this book, but I'm bringing it up because it's going to be our next book club title.
Yes.
I haven't read it yet. You haven't read it yet. We're looking forward to reading it. If you like to listen, if you like to read ahead of listening, that's what we're going to do. Manning Tree Witches by A.K. Blakemore.
So that will be probably not next week's episode, but the week after, right?
Yes. 2 weeks.
Just in terms of timing. So yeah, if you want to listen along to the book club having read the book, then have read the Manning Tree Witches by A.K. Blakemore by the 30th of April, which is when the episode will go out. But if you liked our book club episode about Night Shift by Kiara Ladner and have not read it yet, we would recommend that you stomp into your bookshop and say, one copy of Night Shift by Kiara Ladner, please. Because
yeah, I feel
we love that.
Really, I feel very validated because since we did that episode, I have had so many people message me to say that they've read it and it thought it banged. So I feel like I'm glad, I'm happy, we're doing good things, we're picking good books. So if you don't have to take our word for it. Our listeners have also really enjoyed it. So if you've read it because of us, please let us know, because it's like my lifeblood. Nothing makes me happier.
Agree.
And speaking of which, The Transition Baby by Tori Peters is another one on our list, which we mentioned last week as well, but everyone's buying it right now. We're really like excited and celebrating its place on the Women's Prize long list.
No weapon forged against her shall prosper. All of these nasty little transphobes keep coming out of the woodwork and writing, you know, open letters and saying things about the fact that she's trans and she's on the Women's Prize long list. And all that does is make people buy the book in hundreds and hundreds of copies. And I, for one, could not be happier. So if you are motivated by spite and by good writing, you should go to your bookshop and demand your copy of Detransition Baby by Tori Peters.
Yeah. Well said, pal.
Yeah.
And then the last one on the list was one of the first books we mentioned in this episode, but it's the one that I'm most excited to buy, and that's Clara and the Sun by Kazuo Shiguro.
Yep, which is about an artificial friend, which is like a kind of AI companion to a girl, and what happens when they meet and experience life together.
Do they fuck?
I don't know. I would assume not, because it is a child.
Oh,
but
I did not know that. Okay.
Cancelled.
I feel like reading Bear
has really changed your expectations.
Mariana Engels. Yeah. I now feel like at any point sex could happen. I don't know. But I did not realize that the subject of Clara and the Sun is a child. So
yes.
That was an inappropriate question and I strike it from the record. I've then also just gathered together a list of paperbacks that have come out over the last few months that were hardbacks during the pandemic. So you may have missed them. You may have chosen not to buy them while they're more expensive, but I don't want you to miss them. So I'm just going to do a quick like roll through. The Liar's Dictionary by Ellie Williams, Starling Days by Rowan Hiseo Buchanan, Rest and Be Thankful by Emma Glass, Weather by Jenny Offill, Exciting Times by Nisha Dolan, Braised Pork by Anne Yu, All This Could Be Yours by Jamie Atterberg, My Dog Vanessa by Kate Elizabeth Russell, The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett, and The Discomfort of Evening by Marika Lucas
Reinfeld, translated by Michelle Hutchison.
Yes. Just because, yeah, we haven't been in bookshops, I feel like paperback releases can very easily kind of not really be much of a thing. Like this, we always, you know, we're so focused on what's new. Sometimes paperbacks kind of pass us by anyway, but no more so than right now. So almost everything that we've just rolled off are hardbacks. So, you know, let's just do a little shout out for the paperbacks as well.
Let's hear it for the paperbacks.
Hear it for the PBs.
Well, I've had a delightful time contemplating the world of bookshops with you, my friend Alice Slater.
Me too. And I can't wait. Today's my day off. It's a Wednesday. Maybe I'll even go into one. Who knows?
That's exciting. But you know what's the real exciting thing about this week?
What?
We're being reunited.
Oh, I'm going to see you. I'm going to see your little face. Oh, I can't wait.
My little chubby cheeks.
I'm going to smell your perfume.
I'll make sure I wear my signature scent for our reunion.
Yeah, I'm going to have to, like, it's very strange to think of yourself as, like, a person in the three dimension once again, you know?
So true. Like, you've been my 2D friend for so long now.
Yeah, or even not even 2D, because I haven't even seen, you haven't even seen my little face.
So true. You're a zero dimension friend.
Yeah, I'm just a bodiless voice. Oh, I can't wait. And I feel like it'll just mean that next week's episode will be even more spicy, you know? Like, what's the word I'm looking for? Our chemistry is going to be rekindled.
So true.
This is flat as fuck.
I hate it every minute. Well, we will see you next time. Goodbye.